Okay, ladies, it's time for us to get real with each other. Have you ever said, I feel like I have been dieting forever and I just can't do it anymore? Do you feel like it's time for you to reboot, refresh, and retool your mindset so you can really focus in on the habits and skills that are going to give you that long-term sustainable results that you've been longing for like ever? Well, here's the thing, right? We all know how to reboot our computers. You press Control, Alt, Delete, and boom, the problem goes away. But how do you reboot your metabolism, your mindset, and your habits when you've been dieting since the early 90s? How do you shift your mindset so that you can really focus on your habits and the skills that are going to give you that long-term sustainability? Here's the thing. Women of every age have struggled with this issue. And it's not just you. And it's not just getting in shape after 40. I mean, that would be really nice. It is about managing your weight for the rest of your life with ease. And yes, it can be effortless. I don't know who needs to hear this, but how you get your goal is how you keep your goal. So if you can't drink another green juice, you can't take an extra body pump class, this is what I want you to do. In this podcast, I want you to click on the link for the Reboot and Refocus. It's a success series that I will be running later this fall, and I want to make sure you get the first dibs. So just hop on that wait list, and when you do that, when I open the doors, you'll be the first person to get in for this new free training that I will be hosting later this fall.
Welcome to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you are ready to find your inner magic, develop great habits, and a rock-steady mindset to feel confident, comfortable, and fit in your body, you are in the right place. I am Kim Barnes Jefferson, and I'll be giving you weekly doses of health, fitness, and life tips sprinkled with humor and real talk. If you're ready to be consistent without the stress of perfection, magic makers, it's time to slip into your favorite pair of PJs, grab some coffee, kick back, and listen to today's show.
Hey, magic makers, I just got off the phone with Dr. Laura Gouge, and this is such a powerful episode. Laura is a naturopathic doctor, but she really specializes in working with people around anxiety. And we talked a lot about what is anxiety and what is high functioning anxiety. And she really helps us to define what high functioning anxiety is, as well as go through a myriad of things that you might feel. Now, this is not at all like prescriptive. This is just really to help open the door, start a conversation, because I know I identify as a high functioning anxious person. I'm a perfectionist. Everything has to be just so. I'm a hustler. And I know these types of thoughts, these types of feelings, these types of personality traits almost burnt me down to the ground a few years ago. And so I know that it had to be addressed. And so maybe you are starting to think about those things and maybe wondering, you know, are you a high functioning anxious person? And, you know, she walked through a 6-step process here about how she works with her clients to really help them identify what's going on and how do we get out of it. And we talked about, you know, what it feels like when someone's like, just relax. And we all know, like, girl, if I could relax. Or maybe you feel guilty about relaxing. You know, I have some clients who identify that they can't relax, or they feel guilty when they relax, take some time off. And I know I'm raising my hand high, girl. I was guilty of that then some, and I still feel a little bit anxious about it, but I've gotten much better. I have gotten better able to talk with myself around why I need the rest and recovery. So listen in. She asked some really great questions. Let me say that again, because I could speak English. She gave some really great questions to really help you identify and ask yourself, you know, as you know, we kind of all go through a spiral sometimes. So have a listen. Let me know what you think. And do me a favor. If you love this, leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps me to keep bringing the show, and more listeners start to listen to the show and really understand how they can bring their own fit girl magic. Thank you so much for all that you do. I appreciate each and every one of you listeners.
And here is this week's iTunes review. It comes to you from Dub
by V. She writes, I love the podcast. You speak your mind and you don't sugarcoat anything. I love your energy and your good spirit. Oh, that just fills my heart. You don't even understand how much I enjoy these reviews. So please, if you feel the need, please go to iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Do me a favor and hit me up with a 5-star review. I absolutely love them. They mean the world to me, and I will read it on my podcast. So thank you so much, Dub by V. It does mean the world to me. All right, Magic Makers, this one, okay, you know, I always say it, this is awesome. This is going to be a great conversation, but I really wanted to have this conversation because a few weeks ago, we talked about stress and this time we're talking about anxiety. And I brought, she's a doctor, Dr. Laura Gouge on because she and I were having just a random conversation and she talked about high level anxiety. And I was like, or high functioning anxiety. And I was like, oh my God, I think a lot of my listeners have that. Again, I am not a doctor. That is why I brought her on the show because sometimes I play one on TV or on this podcast and I got to bring experts to back up my crazy thoughts to be they're crazy or, hey, Kim, you're onto something. So Dr. Laura is, actually, I'm not going to call her Dr. Laura because she's awesome. She's just a regular girl, lives in Portland on her way to Austin. And you are going to absolutely enjoy this conversation because she makes things so simple and easy that you'll be like, oh my God, I do have that, or I need to talk more with her. So welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you, Kim. It's so awesome to be here today.
So, you know, literally we were having this random conversation a couple of weeks ago and you just mentioned it off the top of your head and you're like, well, you know, I have high functioning anxiety and, you know, I really wanted to work with more clients around that. And I was like, hang on, that's a thing. And, you know, I think many people, when you think of anxiety, it's like you see on TV, like someone has this like crazy anxiety attack. They think it's a heart attack. And that's what we think anxiety is, that you're always just feeling like a live nerve. But some people, that's how they felt their whole life. And they've just been able to like mute it out.
Absolutely.
So, you know, how would you define high functioning anxiety for someone who's like, huh, is that me?
Yeah. So we want to think of anxiety as a spectrum, right? Because I think 100% of us have experienced anxiety at some point. It's a normal emotion. You know, anxiety is that feeling of fear or something's just not quite right. It's that feeling of worrying or what if something goes wrong? And it can be normal. The night before you take a really big flight or a job interview, a little bit of anxiety is normal. But then we want to think of it like this spectrum where, yes, we have the more severe pathological anxiety disorders where someone is having an impairment in their quality of life. And the symptoms are severe enough that it's causing a problem for them. So that's where we see diagnosable anxiety disorders like generalized anxiety disorder, PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder. But then when we see high functioning anxiety, it's not necessarily a medical diagnosis, but rather it's something that's really common. And what we often see are this collection of traits. And I'm going to list off what it can look like, but I just want to always say it's really easy to identify when you hear a list of traits on a podcast. And so if you do feel like you relate to this, it can be really helpful to talk to someone else about it because these symptoms are not only high functioning anxiety.
Right, right.
But most often we're going to see a type A type personality. So this person may be really successful, a perfectionist. Maybe they did awesome in school or pursued higher levels of education, pursued the best at whatever it is you're doing. These people are often very cool, calm, put together. They often are going to be early. They're very helpful. They're very charming. They're very talkative. They're the ones who might say yes and take on way more than they're actually
when they
able
really
to.
Mean no.
Exactly. There's a real people pleasing quality to this, right? So there's problems with it as well. Underneath that calm and cool exterior, often people with high functioning anxiety feel just racked with like tension and worry. And the people in their life may not know that they experience this anxiety. And so it may be like this exhaustion, this constant fear, something's going to go wrong, feeling like you need coffee to get through your day because you just have too much to do. And then maybe it's really hard to wind down at night. And so you find yourself reaching for wine in a way that doesn't feel like you like need it to help unwind the tension. Maybe there's difficulty sleeping or kind of those little like adult temper tantrums where like that one thing goes wrong and you just have a breakdown. A lot of times there's anxiety underneath that. And so it's not a medical diagnosis, but I think it's very, very common.
I mean, everything you just described, I can say, you know, my listeners, even my clients fall into, I would say, 3 to 5 of the things you rattled off, you know, perfectionism, type A++ with a side of A++, you know, everything's all put together. And if it's not put together, they feel like they're behind, you know,
exactly.
And if I, you know, don't strap on my cape in the morning, then why get up if I can't be, you know, doing 4 million things in a day?
Right. There can be such an all or nothing feeling to it as well. Like, especially when we look at nutrition and fitness, we may see patterns like really perfectionistic, like you're tracking your macros and you're following it. And then one thing goes wrong and it's like, oh, I'm going to scrap this whole day. Or you just feel like a total failure when something is out of your control.
And, you know, when you say that, you know, like we kind of have this like all or nothing perfectionism, you know, can that also feed into, you know, insomnia? Can it also feed into other health problems? Because if I'm not getting adequate sleep, it's a slow drip to other things.
Totally. I think slow drip is such a great way to say it because they are going to, all of this is going to be related. And so typically if we have this like slow burn of anxiety underneath the surface all day long, we're really overwhelmed, we're really busy, we're going to be dripping out stress hormones all day long. So that's where we think about cortisol or norepinephrine, adrenaline is another name for that. But those stress hormones that most of us have experienced in really high extreme levels, like right before you take a big test, we have a slow drip of them all day long. And that's where we see some of those symptoms like difficulty sleeping or the physical stuff like tension headaches or getting digestive upset, you know, like your stomach hurts or your digestion is off when you're under a lot of stress. So there's going to be a lot of overlap in stress and anxiety symptoms here. And it definitely can cause both short-term issues, like let's say insomnia, where it could go on for a long time, but in and of itself, it isn't always serious. And it can lead to more serious issues related to stress, where we think about maybe high blood pressure or heart disease, things like that.
So here's a question I have. So you talked about stress, you talked about anxiety. So can you have one without the other?
Right. I think that's such a good question. So yes, we can have them separately because everyone can experience stress sometimes and not everyone is going to manifest stress as anxiety.
Okay.
But there is a lot of overlap between them. And I think sometimes we're using the wrong words. We're sometimes we're experiencing experiencing anxiety, but it's really being manifested from this external stressor that we have. And then sometimes anxiety is a more internal process where there isn't necessarily an external stressor. So I would say we can, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. It's like, we can have anxiety without stress. Now I'm not going to try to like wrap it up into a cute little saying, but it depends.
Well, you know what? I think if we kind of like, we're trying to make it as vanilla as we can, because there's, you know, like anything, like there's so many flipping nuances in the world. But if I were to say, the way you just described it to me, I would say for most people, stress is something external. An external event, person, something is causing you to make a reaction. Excuse me. Where anxiety is self-imposed. I'm taking something and having meaning to it that I'm not, you know, doing as much as I should, or, you know, being there as fast as I should, or blah, 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 blah. All the things we tell ourselves, where I could take stress. And if, you know, my boss is like, hey, Kim, you got to get that project done by 5 p.m. I can then make it anxious when it's like 4 o'clock. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm still going.
I think that one way we can reframe that is to think about, we all have different thresholds for anxiety.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you look at one of your friends and they're, you know, we all probably have a friend who seems to be able to cope with anything and not be anxious, and that person who falls apart when the littlest thing happens.
Yep.
And so self-imposed, I want to like be careful with that, because it's not necessarily our fault if we get anxiety, because a lot of times there's a way that our brain is actually wired where for whatever reason, we get a really big anxiety response from small inputs. And that's what we see like in more severe cases where our body is responding in really big ways to really little inputs maybe even things we don't realize. And we do have a role in it, in how we choose, like what we say yes to, how we structure our time, and even making mindset shifts and how we respond to the world around us.
Yeah. You just described, and I feel, you know, for some of my listeners and some of my clients, that it's what we make it mean is huge, you know, that it could be that, you know, my boss is telling me something to do at a certain time. I could, for it just being like him being like, hey, I just want it by this time, without really telling you why, you make it be like, I'm not a good employee.
Yes. I'm going to get fired. My boss just emailed me, but they're going to fire me because I have all this self-imposed perfectionism and I'm sure I'm not going to live up. Yeah.
Right. When if you were to say, hey, by the way, 4 o'clock is just unreasonable. Can we have 9 o'clock tomorrow morning? Would be a little bit more, give me a little more wiggle room. The person would probably be like, oh, all right. Or they'd say, hey, I have a meeting at 9, so I need this. So, you know, before we kind of start to make up the stories in our head, you know, sometimes it takes a question or two to really clarify.
The mindset is so huge. And I think being able to meet those catastrophe kind of thoughts with curiosity and even just asking ourselves, well, do I really know? Is that really true? What other possibilities could happen here? Try to remind ourselves of all the good things that have happened. Most of us are wired with some degree of negativity bias. Right? So we remember all the times it went wrong versus all the times that it went right.
Well, that, I mean, like, you know, like in the example of your boss, like the first place you go is I'm going to get fired. Or, you know, it could, your first person is like, oh, well, maybe there's a big meeting and, you know, this information is needed. And, you know, I'm like one piece of the cog versus like, God, I'm going to get fired or I'm going to get in trouble. Like that's our, it's easier for us to believe the negative than it is to believe the positive.
It's so true. It's so true. I will say right now, I have a printout a few years ago at my work. Everyone submitted like little tiny birthday messages where they're just like, we appreciate the work you do. You do such a good job. And I printed it out because like everyone else, I can get that negativity bias.
Oh, God,
and I think sometimes having something to look at, to remind myself of, oh yeah, these are all the times it went right. These are all the good things that have happened. Like sometimes having cues to be able to help us to remember those things can really help.
Like even when, you know, as you mentioned, as I kind of go down the, like the spiral that, you know, maybe those messages will get me from going down to level 10 of the spiral.
Exactly. The goal is not to never spiral, but it's to say, can I intervene when I'm at a 1 or a 2 before I get to the level 10? Can I jump in and have awareness and say, ooh, I am really going to spiral with this thought. I'm assuming the worst. Can I just be curious and pull myself out of that right now? Can I just wait?
And I love what you just said, because I think you know, you also were in naturopathic practice and, you know, most people will come in and they'll be like, oh, okay, you told me to take these 10 supplements and I'm cured. And you're like, cured? That's like, you know, that's a fast leap where it's more about awareness. So like, instead of the symptoms going the full gamut before you see someone, you'll now recognize when they start so that we can nip them in the bud before it gets to something more serious or more severe. And I think the same thing happens with nutrition or fitness. Like, okay, I'm going to go to this 12-week program and I'm set for life. And I'm like, are you? And I'm like, I don't know who came up with there's an end point to things.
I feel like mental health is like fitness in so many ways, in that we're never done. It's not like it's not like bread. We're baked and then we take it out of the oven. It's like, right, with fitness, like you can do a 12-week program and it's going to be awesome and it might set a foundation, but you're going to have to keep exercising. You're going, right, to have to keep eating specific foods to maintain a certain level of fitness. And just like our mental health, we're going to have to show up for ourselves throughout our life, because things are going to change outside of us. And it's not this static thing where it's not like you go to therapy for a year or you take medication for a year and then you're, right, cured. Like, those things may help when we're in a bad place.
Right. It's a prescription, right?
Exactly. There are prescriptions that can help a lot. Just like you can give someone 10 supplements and they're like, wow, I feel so much better. But I feel like that's more getting back into balance. But then it's, right, up to us to maintain that balance where it's, right, like brushing our teeth. I have to brush my teeth for the rest of my life.
Right. Like it or lump it, you do. And,
exactly.
I think that's a great expression. I think that's a great analogy, because so many of us, right, if you think about it, some people brush their teeth every time they eat. Some people just brush their teeth in the morning, brush their teeth at night. And so it's like, we all kind of know what our tolerances are for brushing our teeth. And when you work with a mental health professional, you work with a coach, that's us working together to figure out, where are your tolerances? Like, where are your like boundaries? So that when you start to kind of like, remember that game Operation, like you would put, like you would try to pull the things out.
Oh yeah.
Once you kind of reach that like first initial threshold, you get that buzz of like, ooh, something's getting out of whack. I need to get back into balance, where we don't have that. Like, many of us will, drive ourselves into an early grave because we think we get a prize for doing the most in a day.
Oh my gosh. So true. And I feel like my goal is for my patients not to need me anymore. Right?
Right.
It's like, the sign of being a great doctor is that someone doesn't need to come in anymore.
Right.
But there always is going to be that maintenance level. Like, just like with your clients, when we're working with fitness and nutrition, we're going to have to come back to maintenance, because like the pendulum will always swing, where, right, balance will start to get out of balance. It happens to me. It happens to you. Like, it happens to all of us. So I think that's such an important thing to remember, because so often I think with our mindset, we start to say, oh no, I'm backsliding, or it's all ruined. We get so perfectionistic, when we just have to say the pendulum is going to swing and it's just my job to get back into balance. Maybe,
right,
with help from a coach or a doctor, maybe you already know what to do because you've worked with someone for a while.
Yeah, 100%. So the question that I have for you here is, so I'm listening and I'm like, man, that sounds a little bit like me. How can I start to, because the worst thing you can hear about is like, you just need to relax. Like, as soon as someone tells you, you just need to relax, that's when you're like, oh, hell no, like, shut it down. So how do you, quote unquote, just relax?
Right. Exactly. I think that's so funny. Like, no one in the history of anxiety has ever felt better by being told to relax. But the way that I work with people is, I just came up with what I call the 6 M's for mastering stress and anxiety. And so what I do when I'm working with someone is look at these 6 areas. And so we have mindset, which is what we were talking about being able to have awareness of when we're spiraling with anxiety or stress, and really being able to reframe with curiosity, with exploration. Like, can I just sit with this? Can I reframe what's happening? So mindset, mindfulness that goes with that. Macro and micronutrition is really important. So looking at, is there any issue with micronutrients where someone might be experiencing poor stress response or anxiety? And then macronutrition, like, are we making sure that people are getting adequate protein, carbohydrates, fiber, the right types of fat, looking at those areas. Movement, how we're moving our bodies. Is it serving us? Is it too little? Are we doing too much? I think there's finding the right kind of movement for you is so important. Mm. Then I call it mastering your daily habits, where we just really want to look at how we're spending our time, how we're tending to our self-care. Are we getting outdoors? Are we creating relationships that are meaningful to us? And then medicine, which is where you would look at working with a coach or a doctor. And that could include everything from supplements to pharmaceutical medications. And so obviously there's going to be more things. I didn't include therapy in there because I think therapy is fantastic and I recommend it, but I'm not a therapist. So it's like, right, as far as how I work with people, it's within these six areas.
Right.
And then I often recommend coaching or therapy in addition to it.
Yeah. I everything you said here, I like, because I think, you know, absolutely the awareness, you know, that is like the first step for anything. And, you know, being able to ask ourselves better questions. And as we talked about earlier, being able to, as I'm starting down the spiral, being able to be like, okay, hang on, like, whoa, I'm spiraling, and being able to just, you know, just recognize it. Even if you don't know the answer, just recognize that it's starting, it's happening.
Exactly. Being able to interrupt that process is probably the most valuable thing anyone could do, more than any of the other things. Just being able to have that awareness and even say, ooh, that's that anxious thought. And because most of us just assume all of our thoughts are true or that they're us.
Oh, yeah.
And to be able to say, like, I like to say, oh, that's my anxious voice. Oh, and she's being really mean right now, like telling me right, all the things that could go wrong. Can I turn the volume down on her?
Right. Exactly. You know, it's like that angel or angel devil on your shoulder.
And exactly.
Like, you know, and the devil's always going to scream the loudest. And you have to be like, okay, you know, I just need to mute you, like remove you from the group. you're not contributing. But I also like what you talked about nutrition, because if I am in that, you know, anxious place, stressed place, 9 times out of 10, nutrition, either people fall into two buckets. I'm eating all the things or I'm not eating anything. And I'm relying on, you know, I lived off coffee for a long time, and coffee and things from the vending machine. So it's like, either you're like eating all the things for your stress, or you're just eating to get by.
I think that's really normal that people fall into one of those two areas. Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that as you look at it, you know, you're looking at your nutrition, because also if I'm anxious or stressed, my digestive system is just going to either shut down or slow down.
I feel like so often too, having self-compassion, because there are times in life that we're going to have acute stress. Like I'll use an example of my mom passed away 4 years ago. And that was one of those times that like, I had no appetite. And I think everyone can relate to going through a really right, big thing, like losing your job or a breakup or a divorce or grief, like death in the family. And our appetite is going to be affected because it is a form of stress. And being able to have the self-compassion to say, this is temporary.
Yeah.
This is not a time that I need to be perfect with my nutrition, but it's also a time that I'm just trying to nourish myself when my appetite would allow. Are there things that sound good? So there's, I think, like treatment based, where we can really think, I'm in a place where I'm resourced. I want to be more resilient to stress. I want my anxiety to go away. How can I optimize my lifestyle? And a time and a place when we have to say, like, this is a really tricky time and it's not going to last forever. And I need to just like do my best.
Right. Give yourself.
Yeah. I need to do my best.
And you know what? That's a perfect segue. Like, give yourself the grace and the space, you know? Yeah. If like grief is just one of those things, you know, some days you're like, I feel like a rock star. Other days you're like, oh, good God. And like, you can't predict it. You know, like you could feel like a rock star for like months on end. And then one day, like just something just wipes you out.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And I see it in my practice a lot, especially with women where they're going through something really big. Like I think, especially in the era of life I'm in, I work with a lot of people who are, you know, maybe going through divorces or big transitions, and they're trying to do all the things. Like they're going and doing CrossFit and they're drinking coffee and they're like trying to do this nutrition and they're just burning themselves out. And just that, I think within the six things I talked about, we can focus more on some in different seasons of life and less on the others. Like I would say, when you're in a period of grief, it's probably a time to do walking and yoga and less time to do CrossFit because you're already so stressed in other ways. And then when you're feeling great, like get back at those like really long runs and doing the intense exercise, because we're going to need different things at different times.
No, I really, I've been really harping on the season of life, with, my clients, just, you know, here we are, you know, I hate dating podcasts, but it's happening. It's fall, right? So it's like in the fall is like when we are harvesting the thoughts, the efforts that we just sowed over the last 6 months. And so now it's like when you kind of start thinking about, you know, planting bulbs that are going to come up for the next 6 months, it's like, you know, what are the thoughts? What are the goals that we have? And we're going to plant them and not, and be able to just let them like percolate, you know. No, like I plant tulips right now. I'm not going to go out every damn day and be like, you growing? Like being able to plant the seed and like, just know that it's going to, you know, that's for future endeavors versus, you know, as we said, like, you know, I need to get all 500 things done today. If it's not done today, then I'm screwed.
I love that analogy so much. It's one that I come back to for myself of like different seasons of life, because I feel like it's true. Like everything you just said, like, and it's hard because with the people in our lives, we're all in different seasons. Mm. And so you see your friend who's like reaping the summer and, you know, it's like all good. And if you're in more of like a winter transition, it can feel, you may feel like you're behind, but I think it's so helpful to be like, you know what? I'm in a winter season. There's a lot of transition. My spring will come again, you know, my summer will come again. And being able to have that awareness and that patience of just life moves through these things. Like it would be exhausting if we were in summer 24/7.
Right. And, you know, and also the, you know, give ourselves the grace that, yeah, I mean, we're not a season, and it might last you 9 months. Right. And I mean, mm-hmm. I live in New England. You live on the Northwest. Like sometimes summer, it lasts 2 minutes. And sometimes winter, you're like, for the love of God, winter, it's time to be over.
Right.
So you have to like, know that it's not going to be these like perfectly timed, like 90 day, you know, segments. Like I wish too, like sometimes like the shit is just too much for me. And I'm like, when you over, when you leave it, like you're that unwanted house guest.
100%, 100%. And I think, you know, here in the Pacific Northwest, our summers are so short. And every year I feel angry when it starts to get cold, like every year. And it's like, I know this is how it's supposed to be. Like, this is normal, but I feel actual anger that the summer isn't longer.
I'm in that place right now. Like, and it feels like it comes out of left field. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you know, it goes from like, I'm wearing a tank top in the morning to like, all of a sudden I'm wearing like a long sleeve shirt to all of a sudden I'm like, dude, I might need to put on a coat. Like what's happening? Like, and it just feels like it happens in a span of like days. And, you know, people are, I was watching the news the other day and they're like, well, you know, out in the suburbs, it's going to get into the 30s. So your heat may come on. I'm like, your heat? The hell you say?
I know. And yet I feel like if we could apply the acceptance we have of like, we may be mad, we may not like it, we may hate the winter, but it's still, if we could apply just that acceptance and say like, yeah, it's the winter, like I'm just going to last as long as it lasts. But then, you know, next year will come. If we can apply just that acceptance, our lives would be so much less stressful.
So much less stressful. Cause it's like, you know, even if you're pissed putting on your coat in the morning, you still put on your coat.
Exactly. Exactly. You just like roll with it. You're like, I don't like this. It's okay not to like it. Like, I think acceptance is something that we misconstrue where you don't have to like it. Like accepting something doesn't mean you're like loving of it. It's okay to just accept it and be like, this is how it is right now. Like,
yeah. No, and I like that what you just said, this is how it is right now. But the operative word is that, you know, you might be slugging through something right now, but eventually you are going to get on the other side. And so would you say for people, it's like, well, define what the other side looks like.
Yeah. And I think it can be so difficult when you're in the moment and it feels like it's never going to get better, especially with something with our mental health. But the other side, you know, I think it's actually a lot like spring, where when I'm working with people, it's not like one day anxiety just disappears. Or yes. Let's say there's a habit, like we're talking a lot about nutrition. So a lot of times when people experience anxiety, there's overeating. Usually people don't just wake up one morning and never overeat again. Mm-hmm. What happens is we start to see this gradual transition of like, we start seeing more sunny days. We start to see more days where, ooh, I was able to like honor my appetite, or this really stressful thing happened and I didn't reach for food for comfort. I ate according to my appetite and my body needs, but I didn't binge. And we see this like progressive improvement, but there still may be backslide, so to speak, where that symptom still shows up, the anxiety, the overeating, whatever it is. And we just start to see this progressive, you know, higher resilience to stress, less overeating, less of the habit. We see like more and more until all of a sudden it is appears maybe overnight, but you look back and you're like, whoa, I haven't done that in over 6 months, or this really stressful thing just happened and I'm fine. And a year ago, I would have been in a puddle on the floor. And so often we see it even in retrospect where we don't recognize it because, again, we have our problems and our things and, you know, but we look back and it's like, ooh, I would have had a panic attack if this had happened a year ago. And I'm just a little stressed. And I think that's often how it looks.
No, I like that because it's, you know, the more sunny days, and it's, there's a meme that goes around the socials, like probably like once every like year. And it's a guy with a pickaxe, like digging through a hole. And then like right on the other side is like, it says breakthrough. And then like, you just see the person like picking axe and then turns around. And it's like, I think, you know, just as like the like friction gets too much, we're like, and then you like leave because it's just like, you just can't handle it anymore. Where for many people, I think if you just kind of like put one more pick into that, you know, hole, you would find that, you know, slither of light.
Exactly. It's like the tulip analogy you use where you just show up and you keep watering it and you keep making sure it has the right conditions, but you can't control it when it pops up.
Right.
I think so often our own health is like that, where we just have to keep showing up, and it can feel scary if we don't get results right away.
Right. So, you know, I always like to try to give people who are listening like some action. So, you know, I'm listening here and I'm stuck in that like high functioning, but I know that I'm always like, I got to do 500 things and it has to be, you know, A++. And, you know, if I don't do these 500 things, like who's going to hold me accountable? And you just kind of like go. Like, how do I know? I'm hearing this and I'm like, yeah, this sounds a lot like me. How do I even like get started? Or do I ask myself, do I want to get started?
I feel like that is such a great question to start with, of do I want it to be different? Because why am I choosing this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a simple question that I think could be helpful if you are that person who's doing a million things is not how do I manage my time better, but what is my relationship to rest and space? Because so often it's not that we're so busy, but it's that the idea of space is very stressful. We tend to experience anxiety in our downtime. Right?
When you said the word, like two things that were like, whoa, like my eyes, like this is a cartoon. My eyes would have popped out and come back in. Two things you said that I hear regularly from my clients. So you talked about choosing and you talked about rest. And regularly I hear from my clients, I'm like, okay, so what do you do to like relax? And they'll be like, I can't relax. I always feel like I should be doing something. And I'm like, okay, I'm like, God, that's great. I'm like, I'm not going to judge, but I'm like, maybe doing something's like coloring, you know, like what are some of the baby steps that it's not like you're, you know, I gotta like write a novel in order to feel like I'm, you know, doing something, or I gotta be productive, right? Like, do you like gardening? Like that can give you the busy, but also it's also like very relaxing. But a lot of people will say, if I'm resting, like literally sitting on my ass, just watching TV, doing nothing, that's, you know, they're like, oh, I can't do that. You know, like some of them feel like they didn't earn the right to it. And some of them feel like that's just downright lazy.
Yeah. I feel like our culture is slowly changing that narrative. But I think for so long, we felt like we had to earn rest, or like we didn't have the right to it. And it was something we had to wait to finish all of our work before we could take time off for ourselves, instead of saying, my work is still going to be here tomorrow. Like, I'm going to shut it all down at 5 p.m. or whatever your schedule is, and giving ourselves that time and space.
But you hit the nail on the head. Give myself a schedule. I know, you know, you work for yourself. I work for myself. And that was like, when I worked for an employer, I did have more than 40-hour-week job. So I'll limit that. But when I started working for myself, I was like, well, if I don't work for myself, like, I enjoy lights. Like, that's fabulous for me. I like heat. Like, those are the things. So I'm like, if I'm not hustling and grinding, I'm not going to have lights. I'm not going to have heat. I'm not going to eat. And you just kind of get caught up in that mentality of like, what am I going to have? But the question you asked that I was asked that finally started me to like break out of my hustle mode was, why are you choosing this? If you could you choose different? And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, hang on. I do have choices. You know, there's not this like, you know, I'm not in like some Russian gulag where they're, you know, if I don't work this hard, I'm not going to eat, or I'm not going to, you know, get the basics of life, where I chose this life.
Exactly. We have so much more choice than I think we often recognize in the moment. And I also remind myself when I get caught up in those spirals that it's a myth to think I'm ever going to get caught up, because of course there's all the work of your job, but then there's also the life stuff of, you know, taking care of your own home and feeding yourself and laundry, like that stuff, you never get caught up. And frankly, no. I think if we did get caught up, we would feel tremendous anxiety.
Right. Cause then all of a sudden you would start looking for things. Like think about the perfect example is laundry. I just did laundry this morning. I walked right past the hamper, the socks in it already. And I was like, I mean, if I had to do laundry every time there's like one thing in the laundry basket, I would be like nuts.
Exactly. And so remembering we're not going to get caught up, and it's not to say like, oh, let me just be lazy and like not do any of it, but how can I make my life work with what I have? And so like with working for myself, I had to put boundaries around it.
Yes.
And interestingly, I got a lot more productive. There's a saying, I'm not sure who says it, but it's like your task will fit the amount of time you give it. And
yes.
So if you give yourself all night, like I could, you know, you can work forever, but if you say, I have to do this and be done by 5 p.m., miraculously, that seems to work.
I have a friend who wrote a book, and I wish I could remember the name of Rob's book. Rob, if you're listening, sorry, you know, I love you deep inside. But he wrote a book, and it was basically how whenever we go on vacation, so say I'm going on vacation on Friday, that whole week, I am productive like a mofo. And he's like, can you translate that same productivity every single week? And, you know, he, you know, basically walked you through, and I will Google this and find the book. But he, let me write that down, cause I could be lying to you if I don't write it down. Rob's book. And he's like, how do you translate that to just every week? Like giving yourself that like kind of vacation deadline, and that vacation, as the way he describes it, is a weekend. Like give yourself, you know, cause he has minimum two, but maybe three kids. And he's like, I was spending so much time working that, you know, I was missing like the soccer games or coming halftime. And he's like, you know, your kids are only little for so long before they're like, drop me at the corner. And he's like, I was missing the parts where they want me to be there. And so I think what you just said is like, I can choose to work differently. Like if I tell myself that I have, you know, I'm working on a deadline right now. So if I tell myself right now I have until the 18th, you bet your sweet ass is going to take the 18th for me to get it done. But if I tell myself I have to the 13th, I know in the back of my head I have the 18th, but I'm like, can I hit that 13th?
I think can set little deadlines for ourselves too, in order to like maximize what we're doing, so that like we can have it all, just not every single day. I think so often as women, we're trying to do too much, but to really be present and to say, okay, cool. On Tuesday night, I'm going to have time with my friends and I'm not going to exercise that day, but Wednesday I'll exercise, and
yes.
Thursday, you know, I'm going to work most of the day and then have time for my house stuff, but like really being present to the different things that are priorities, but not trying to do them all 7 days a week. Like that's where we burn out.
Yes, yes. You know, so it's funny you say that. Like, I feel like you were like in my brain today. because I after we get off of here, I need to do a few videos. And one of the videos is that I would, you know, want to talk about like, you can have it all, but you can have it all right now. And how so many of us get overwhelmed, slightly anxious because you start like, all right, I want to lose 10 pounds and then I want to plan a vacation. Oh, and then I got to deal with, you know, signing up Susie for soccer. Then my mom is this and this and work. And then you just start like going down these like zipping back and forth between all these different things. And no wonder you're overwhelmed because like there's not like one time you just sit down and just focus on like, I'm just going to focus on making sure Susie gets signed up. Because it's like you half fill out the form and then you're off to something else and then back to half filling out the form and then off to something else. But we don't just give ourselves time to just like single task because we feel like that's not enough.
It's so true. And I think it's where our culture has really programmed us to think it's not enough, that we need to be running at the speed of basically having adrenaline pumping through our system to be normal or productive. Like, you know, for me, that was something I had to untangle, was this idea that if I'm not working so hard that I have adrenaline, I must not be working hard enough.
And to be able
to actually not do it like that anymore. But I had to like reprogram how I defined productivity for myself and what kind of quality of life I wanted to have.
Oh, you got some good questions.
Well done. There are things to think about.
Oh my goodness.
It's possible for everyone, I would say.
It is. And I'm laughing. So when I started this podcast, I was like, I just would write down, like, I make sure I hit these topics. And then all of a sudden this book turned into like all the like ahas that I've gotten from my guest. But that was the biggest aha. How do you define production? And I love that because one question that kind of hit me square between the eyes before was, how do I define success? All right. And so many people, if I ask this question, I ask the success question, you're going to get these pat answers, you know, that like, that you've, you know, read on like a quotable versus like someone sitting down and just being like, dang, how do I define that? Like, what does that like make me, you know, how do I feel productive? You know, is it always like in motion? You know, or is it like, you know, I know how I had to break it through was like, I had to pick three things. Well, my coach made me do it. She's like, pick three things. And it couldn't be like paint my whole house. Like it had to be like paint my front door or paint the front entrance. It had to be like these small things that I can like easily cross the box off so that I felt productive.
I think reframing how we define productivity can also lead into like a follow-up where we ask ourselves, do I really want to be doing this? Because there are things so many of us take on, you know, helping out, friends ask us for things, you know, where you can really give yourself permission to say no, where maybe there are these standing obligations in your calendar that were fit for a while and they're not a fit anymore. But I think we have to start with asking how we define productivity, and then we can even ask ourselves, do I want to say yes to this? Do I still want to do this? Is this serving me? Is this serving them?
Yeah, because I'm just going to throw it out there. If you ask me, Kim, can you help me move? The answer is always going to be no. I do not. I barely want to move myself. That's why I never move. And I'm like, and as I say that, I'm like, you know, Laura, you're preparing for like a cross-country move. And you're like, oh girl, I know.
I'm not prepared to ask any friends. I feel like we're too old for that. Beer and pizza do not provide incentives to anyone I know at this age.
I could buy my own damn pizza.
Exactly.
And I'm particular about my pizza. So I don't want some like cheesy Al's pizza. Who the hell's Al?
No, it's so true. It's so true. But, and I think it's important to recognize those things for the high functioning, anxious people pleasers that I think most of us can relate to at some point. It's really hard to start saying no to things like this, but it is one of the simplest ways to free up more time in your schedule.
Yeah. The best thing that I like, whenever I find myself kind of in that, like about to say yes, but I really, really, really mean no, is that I was like, No is a complete sentence. No is a complete sentence. And a lot of times I have to like chant that around my chant that around my house. Or if, you know, I still teach a few classes in person, and I, you know, sometimes they'll ask like, can you do like all these classes? I'm like, you know what? My schedule allows me to do all these classes, but do I want to do all these classes? So I'm like, I will cherry pick things that work better, best for my schedule.
Practice makes perfect with saying no.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Cause it's like, you're like, oh, you know, you're like in your head, you're like, oh, I really want to help. But I'm like, at the same time, I'm like, I really don't want to help.
I think we need to honor that. You know, there's that saying of like, when you say yes to someone, when you mean no, it's like you're dishonoring yourself. And to care about your own needs and your own feelings as much as you're worried about how your friend will feel if you say no when they ask you for something, I think is really important, because it's dishonoring ourselves every time we do that.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. So, you know, as we kind of like start to wrap this up, I love that how we started out that anxiety is a spectrum, right? So that it's not that you, and being, you know, anxious isn't exactly like this like death sentence. It's something that we can start to, as we've talked multiple times, recognize it. Like, what causes you to start to like, you know, have your little mini like, oh my gods. And how can we start to recognize those mini oh my gods, so that they don't turn into like, you know, the bigger oh my gods like popping all over around your head. But I also like how you talked about the slow burn, you know, that the more we just say this is how life is and just internalize and start thinking all our crazy thoughts, the more we are going to affect other parts of our health.
Right. And I would say to anyone who identifies with a conversation around high functioning anxiety, it doesn't have to be that bad in quotation marks to get support with it. You know, so often we are high achieving and doing all the things and appearingly like life is perfect. We have it all together, but there is this, you know, what we just said, the slow burn underneath the surface. And it doesn't have to be this pathological thing to get support and to do something about it, because I think often we underestimate just how good life can be on the other side of that functioning anxiety when we start to unravel it and choose a new way. That just because it's not on that spectrum of really pathological, making it so bad that you can't work or something like that, you don't have to wait for it to get that bad. Kind of like our cars. We take our cars in for maintenance before they break down. We don't wait for the breakdown. And I think with often high functioning anxiety, it can be helpful to get support before you need it, so you're not running at a breakneck speed 24/7 for the rest of your life.
Yeah, no, I absolutely like that. And so, you know, like one thing I just want to touch on quickly that, you know, for many people, my anxiety, it can affect my health. So we talked about, you know, potential for high blood pressure. We talked about potential for weight gain because I might be stress eating or not making the best choices under pressure. We also talked about it leading to insomnia. And can that like go on for like years?
Absolutely. It can last for a really long time. And when we think about chronic stress, I think chronic stress is related to most health conditions that we see as people get older. I mean, it's one of those risk factors that almost like doesn't mean anything, where you're like, what does that even mean? Chronic stress, don't we all have that? And obviously some people have more than others, but chronic stress is going to be a risk factor for most health problems. And I would say that the milder ones, like just having stomach upset or a lot of difficulty sleeping, that can have a really negative impact on the quality of life that we have and be a risk factor for other health issues.
Yeah. And a lot of my clients will have digestive issues, and I'm like, but they're also like stressed. And I was like, do you think there's a correlation?
Right.
And, as we talked about it, many people are like, well, this is just how life is. And I'm like, and then it goes back to what you said. Is this how you're choosing for life to be? You know, because as we mentioned, they're seasons, right? We are going to have those seasons where we're, you know, running crazy. You know, I always talk about my client, Kate. She's a tax attorney. Or, you know, don't call her in April.
she don't right. know you. That's her busy season. That's not the season that she's right. going to take on like running a marathon.
Right. She don't know your name. Call her now. She's like, oh, hey, girl, what's going on? Right. So right. it's like we all kind of have to know where we are. And, you know, every day can't be summer. Every day can't be a high alert day.
Exactly.
Oh, Laura, this is really, 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 really good. And so I ask everyone who comes on the show, what makes them feel magical?
It makes me feel magical when I'm able to sit down with someone and we can together just hone in on what's bothering them most and be able to help them with that. It makes me feel magical every single time someone comes in and says, oh my God, I'm sleeping through the night again, or my IBS is gone, or my anxiety is a zero, or I haven't had a panic attack in a year. I feel magical every time that I'm able to help someone with any of those things.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Yeah. Cause I mean, I know for me, like if I don't get a good night's sleep, I am just like miserable the next day. So I can't even imagine if it was like years and years of not having a good night's sleep, I would probably be in jail.
It's a game changer. No, it really is. It makes people fundamentally different human beings when they start sleeping.
Yeah, for sure. Laura, so where can people find you if they want to learn more about how you work with people, folks with anxiety? Where can they find you?
Sure. So across the social platforms, I'm at Dr. Laura Gouge. So DrLauraGouge. That's my website, drlauragouge.com. I'm at Dr. Laura Gouge on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I have a Facebook for Dr. Laura Gouge, but it's mostly just the Instagram reposts. So definitely connect on Instagram. I love getting DMs and talking to people. And I also have my website. So that's the easiest way to get in touch.
Great, good, good, great. And I just love this. And I mean, we talked about so many different things. You know how I am. I go through a lot of topics, but I want you to think about the very beginning. Like, and if you have to go back and listen to this, think about everything she labeled, right? I will always be a high functioning anxious person, but I now, you know, instead of going down to level 10, sometimes I catch myself like pushing the elevator button. Sometimes I catch myself on the second floor. But here's where I just want you to think about, like, what are those places that you identify? And what, like, as Laura asked, like, what are you choosing? Are you choosing to continue this life? Because you can choose different. I don't know who said that, but it's really powerful. And I'm just going to say I said it right now. But you can choose different. And so, you know, if you have to listen to this a couple of times, reach out to Laura. Like, this is her jam, right? This is what she does. And I want you to have your best life, you know, anxious, feeling anxious and always feeling like a live nerve. Like, how is that a life? Like, it's okay. You can choose different. You can do different. So thank you so much for hopping on the show today, Laura.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And don't forget to follow her on the socials. And if you had an aha moment, feel free to screenshot this and tag both of us and let us know what your aha is. And if you would be so kind to leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you don't know how to do that, do me a favor, shoot me a DM and I will send you a link to show you how to easily do it in like 4 steps. All right, magic makers, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you've made it this far, yay. I'm thinking you enjoyed the show. Let's continue the conversation on Instagram. You can find me at Kim Jefferson Coach. In order for me to keep sharing this message, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. New episodes are available every Wednesday. The Fit Girl Magic Podcast is intended to provide you with tips, tools, and strategies that will help you make better decisions about your health. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much.